content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jen Rogers for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is all about pets. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Catster.com and Dogster Magazine. As with most programs, I like to start with an article from Catster.com. And today we'll be starting with an article titled Adoption Today by Arden Moore. Several years ago, I began my adoption quest to find a kitten filled with confidence and curiosity. I met several felines at a number of animal shelters, but each came with a deal breaker: too shy or terrified of dogs or diagnosed with a chronic health condition. Then I discovered a spunky ginger kitten at a mobile adoption event at a local Petco hosted by the San Diego Humane Society. At 4 months of age, Casey entertained onlookers with his gymnastic moves inside his modular housing unit. He came when I called, rubbed his cheek against my extended index finger, and relaxed my arms even when a DOG walked past to attend a canine obedience class at the store. I knew in an instant that he was the one. Now 7, Casey still loves learning new tricks and traveling to meet anyone, anywhere. Known as Pet Safety Cat Casey, he accompanies me in my pet first aid and pet behavior classes, as well as our visits to see kids, seniors, and others in need of a friendly feline visit in his role as a certified therapy cat. Casey was definitely worth my long search. He is my BFF, that's best feline friend. A look back at adoptions. Curious as, say, a cat to know when and where the first animal welfare society was created in the world? Historic records identify the first began in England on June 16, 1824, when a group of people wanting to protect animals from cruelty created what would become the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. By the turn of the century, similar animal protection societies emerged in neighboring Austria, Belgium, France, Germany, and Holland. Today, the RSPCA ranks as the world's largest and oldest animal welfare charity. In the United States, bragging rights for the first American society goes to the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals in 1866. Credit a New Yorker named Henry Berg, who intervened and stopped a carriage driver in 1863 from beating his fallen horse. It made such a major impact on Henry that he quit his job as a foreign diplomat to create the ASPCA. In the West, the Dumb Friends League in Denver is growing and evolving, more than a century after being founded in 1910 by Jean Milne Gower and a group of friends. The Dumb Friends moniker was done in respect by these women who wanted to help animals who could not speak for themselves. The shelter's humble beginnings consisted of makeshift sheds and barns. Today, the DFL offers a comprehensive list of services, from behavior training to adoptions to wellness services to full-service veterinary clinics. Honors for the country's largest no-kill animal sanctuary goes to Best Friends Animal Society in Kanab, Utah, which was founded in 1984. Today, Best Friend Network partners, shelters, rescue groups, spay-neuter organizations, and animal welfare organizations are united in making the United States a no-kill nation by 2025. On the other end of the spectrum, there are nonprofit groups that intentionally narrow their adoption focus. In Maple Grove, Minnesota, you will find the Bitty Kitty Brigade, an all-volunteer group bottle feeding and caring for neonatal kittens. Neonates are incredibly fragile and can decline very quickly when they are not provided the medical care they need, says co-founder Mandy Dwyer. Our foster caregivers need to be willing to dedicate the time required to care for these kittens, which can be a lot. BKB also requires that you must adopt in pairs or have another young companion at home for your new kitten. Young kittens now have a better chance of surviving, thriving, and landing in loving homes thanks to such nationally recognized programs, including the National Kitten Coalition and the Kitten Nursery Program at the San Diego Humane Society. We are seeing more adoptions of kittens and cats who in previous years may not have been given the chance to get adopted, such as those with special medical or dietary needs, missing limbs, FIV or FLV positive, geriatric cats, notes Rosemarie Crawford, who co-founded the NKC with Susan Spaulding in 2008. You're starting to see more shelters and rescues working together for the benefit of the animals. So many more lives are being saved. The SDHS created several game-changing programs to boost adoptions in recent years and share their knowledge with other shelters. These programs include the Adoption Ambassador Program, AAP, to help shelter animals get adopted directly from their foster homes. The Working Cat Adoption Program for cats who do not thrive in a shelter setting, and the Kitten Nursery for underage kittens. There weren't enough foster homes available to help these at-risk kittens to survive and grow. So the Kitten Nursery was developed in 2009 to be a safety net for those kittens where foster homes could not be found, says Jackie Noble, SDHS Director of Nursery and Placement. We have developed a lot of resources that are shared with other shelters across the country. Today's adoption options. Ready to adopt a kitten or cat? You now have many options, which all have different adoption processes, so make sure to research. You can book an appointment at your local animal shelter. A shelter houses homeless animals, is typically a nonprofit and independently run, although they may be affiliated with a larger organization like the ASPCA, the Humane Society of the United States, HSUS, or Best Friends Animal Society. Contact a cat rescue group. Rescue groups take in homeless pets and work to find new forever homes for them. Many specialize, some do cats only, senior cats, or kittens. Rescue groups are also typically independent, nonprofit organizations that may be affiliated with a larger organization. The cats are not necessarily housed at an animal shelter, but rather with a network of volunteer fosters. Visit your county animal care center. This is a local government-run animal shelter and can be found by looking on your city or county website. Attend a local pet adoption meet-and-greet event. These events are held by local rescues and shelters. Reach out to a breed-specific group. Each breed has an organization devoted to the continuation, education, care, and welfare of that breed. This includes taking in cats of that breed that have found themselves homeless and finding a new home for them. You can find breed-specific organizations through the cat registry organization they are affiliated with, such as the International Cat Association or the Cat Fanciers Association. Rescue a stray kitten or cat from the streets. Take in a cat from a family member or neighbor no longer able to care for the feline. Find a match online at various adoption sites all over the globe, such as AdoptAPet.com and PetFinder.com. Foster fail/success. You can agree to a foster cat and assess how the both of you are bonding in your home before making that call to permanently adopt. People who do this often sheepishly describe themselves as foster failures, but in reality, these are foster successes because they took the time to make sure the match works for them and the cats. Pack your patience. Adoption is a process. At shelters and rescue groups, expect to fill out plenty of forms and answer questions about your cat history, current pets, and children in your home, whether you rent or own in other areas. The organizations ask these questions to reduce the risk of the cat having to be returned back to the adoption center. Some steps that may be a part of the process include meet and greets. You may need to go to the home of the fosterer or to the shelter to meet the cat in person once or twice. Matching. Some rescues and shelters have a person whose job it is to help you make the best match, the cat whose health and age best matches your current life circumstances. You work from home? Do you have children? Are you looking for an active cat, or is your a lap cat more your style? Home inspection. Some adoption processes include a home inspection. A home checker will come to your house for a cat's eye view of your home, looking for potential risks and proper preparation. Education. Sometimes you will be required to take a class or read educational materials on best cat care practices. Vet check. You may be asked to provide your veterinarian's name and phone number for a referral. This is just to make sure that you have given your cat or cats, your current cat or past cats, regular vet care. A wellness exam by your vet following the adoption may be part of the adoption agreement. Adoption contract. Often if you adopt from a shelter or rescue, you will have to sign an adoption contract or agreement. Some items included are agreeing to regularly take your cat to the veterinarian, not allow your cat to go outdoors, taking the cat immediately to the veterinarian for a wellness check, getting your cat microchipped if it hasn't been already, agreeing to spay and neuter the cat if he/she isn't already, and agreeing to return the cat to the organization if for some reason you are unable to keep the cat in the future. Fee. Keep in mind that there is no such thing as a free cat, even if you rescue a homeless stray. Animal shelters and rescue groups usually charge adoption fees, but they often have covered the spay or neuter surgery and first round of needed vaccinations. If you've rescued a homeless cat from the streets, your very first step would be to take the cat to your vet for a wellness exam. Make sure you understand the group's adoption process and adoption agreement expectations before starting down the adoption path. During my adoption search for Casey, I kept the words of Marty Becker, Doctorate of Veterinary Medicine, known as America's Family Veterinarian, in my head. Take your time. Pick with purpose. Don't choose a cat by looks alone. After all, you'll probably have this cat longer than your current job, your current residence, your current car, and maybe even your current relationship. Next, we'll move on to another article from Catster.com, this time about cat behavior. Do cats get lonely, or are they fine without other cats? By Kelly B. Gormley. There's a misconception that cats are curmudgeons who don't make friends with other cats. So, do cats get lonely, and do cats need other cats for company? It comes down to a few different factors, like personality and age. Tigers live as solitary hunters in jungles. Lions live in prides and grasslands. What about our domestic cats? Are they loners like tigers or social like lions? Yes and yes, and no and no. Depending on the cat and the situation, experts say. We talked to some of those pros to try to answer the age-old question. Do cats get sad and lonely? And do cats need other cats? Do cats get lonely? Are they happier in single cat households? The first step in answering, do cats get lonely, is knowing that domestic cats are solitary when it comes to hunting and eating. Dogs may have a reputation for being more social, but that is only because they hunt in packs. Not so with cats who don't like eating too close to each other. Many parents in multi-cat households put their kitties' food bowls next to each other, but this is a mistake, says Marilyn Krieger, a certified cat behavior consultant in the San Francisco Bay Area. Cats have to eat, so they will, but they're not very happy. It's a little stressful, says Krieger, who's also known as the cat coach. Outside of mealtime, though, most cats have social needs. While some cats hate their own kind and must be the household's only pet, feral cats form colonies and many pet cats befriend each other. They have several complex social and cooperative behaviors, such as caring for each other's young. This is Dr. Leticia M.S. Dantas, Doctorate of Veterinary Medicine, Master's of Science, Ph.D., a faculty member at the Athens-based University of Georgia Veterinary Teaching Hospital's Behavioral Medicine Service, and a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, says about feral cats. The confusion comes from the fact that strangers are not usually welcomed. The group is usually formed by a family line, a queen, and some of her litter that chose not to leave, not newcomers. And what about pet cats? Are cats sad when they're the only cat in the household? Domestic cats are a social species, Dr. Dantas says. Yes, you can have cats that are buddies because they really like each other and not because they have to be, Krieger says. Still, cats are able to survive as solo creatures, Krieger says, even if that isn't their preference, and adult kitties have a territorial nature. The answer to do cats get lonely is likely yes, if they're kittens. The territorial nature doesn't typically kick in until adulthood. Kittens crave playmates, and they are especially bonded with their litter mates. But even if you adopt kittens from separate litters, they will likely become instant besties. For most kittens, the way they learn social skills is by interacting and playing with each other, Krieger says. Most kittens do quite well together. Still, though, kittens tend to be more socially flexible. Just with any species, some individuals are born not being comfortable around strangers, Dantas cautions. Matching your cat to a second cat. Do you have a cat-hating cat who must be by herself? A situation that might result from a kitty that got separated from her litter mates at an early age? Or a lonely cat who wants a buddy? It may be difficult to tell, as your cat might be clingy and needy with her human, but not necessarily do well with another cat around her, Krieger says. It helps to know the history of both cats, the resident and the potential newcomer, if you want to predict whether the two will get along. Having grown up with others is not a recipe for success, since cats are individuals and some of them simply do not get along, Dantas says. Cats who are playful with other cats were socialized to other cats as kittens, and throughout their lives and do not have clinical signs of fear or anxiety have more chances of success. When choosing a feline companion for your cat, look for one that is similar age and therefore has a similar energy level. If you have an older cat, a kitten will torment and pester him with manic energy. Kitten's job is to be playful and explore their world and attack things, Krieger says. The older's job is, cat's job is to take a nap. If you have an older cat and want to adopt a kitten, get two kittens so they can play with each other and let their older uncle relax in peace. Otherwise, look for an older best friend for your adult cat. Introducing cats. The next question you'll have when asking, do cats get lonely, is how do I introduce two cats? Cats do form very close bonds with each other, Krieger explains. Even adult cats can become close companions if they're introduced correctly. Introduce cats correctly by keeping them separate at first, Dante says. This lets them get to know each other's sounds and smells and gives their brains time to hopefully decrease the neuroendocrine stress response. Each cat needs their own food dish and litter area, and a positive experience should come with introductions like treats. Getting a new companion for a grieving cat. Are cats sad and do get lonely after their longtime feline companion passes on? When a cat dies, the loss leaves a void in both your life and your remaining cat's life. The question is how soon cat parents and their resident kitties should seek new companionship. Dantas and Krieger recommend giving your cat and yourself time to grieve and stabilize. This may take a month or several months. Cats form bonds, but they only crave the company of the cats they are bonded with, Dantas says. A bond cannot be transferred from one individual to another. Krieger also discourages bringing in another cat right away. Even though your bereaved cat is lonely, this is stressful for your pet as the new cat is an alien. They know this cat is not their buddy. They smell different, they look different, and everything about them is different. Next, we'll move on to Dogster magazine. And in Dogster today, we'll start with an article titled, Wild in the Neighborhood, Coyotes, Tips to Keep Your Pets Safe from These Canine Cousins by Audrey Pavia. He's known as the trickster in Native American culture, has famously appeared in Looney Tunes shorts, and is found living happily in every state in the Union. We're talking about the coyote, our dog's most populous wild cousin. If you've ever seen a coyote in the flesh, you know how closely this wild canid resembles some domestic dog breeds. Siberian Huskies, Shiba Inus, and Australian Kelpies are just a few breeds that possess a primitive look reminiscent of the coyote. While hundreds of years of domestication have softened that wild appearance, if you take a good look at a coyote, it's easy to make the connection. A neighborhood near you. The coyote, Canis latrans, known by the nickname Song Dog, is one of a few canine species native to North America. Once found mostly in the western United States, coyotes have spread all throughout the United States and Canada, with some even making it to Mexico and beyond. Because coyotes are so smart and adaptable, they have found ways to coexist with humans and are flourishing in suburbs and even some urban areas, including New York City. Coyotes have a bad reputation with many people because of their proclivity to capture and kill domestic pets. Although a coyote's normal diet consists of rodents, rabbits, and deer, cats have become a favorite prey of coyotes that live in suburban and urban areas. Because male coyotes can weigh as much as 44 pounds and females 40 pounds, are also big enough to take down small dogs. Suburban neighborhoods frequented by coyotes are dangerous places for cats and small dogs who venture outside, particularly at night. Over the centuries, farmers and ranchers have waged war on the coyote because of their tendency to prey on livestock. Young sheep, goats, and cattle have been the most likely target. Yet despite attempts to wipe them out over the past 100 years, coyotes continue to thrive. While some people are afraid of coyotes and view them as aggressive wild dogs, coyote attacks on humans are rare. The truth is that most coyotes are shy with humans and will run away if they see a person. Coyotes who are less frightened of people tend to be in those who live in highly populated areas, where they have grown accustomed to human presence. Just like dogs, but not. Coyotes don't just look like dogs, they act like them too, in many ways. Highly social like dogs, coyotes live in packs. They play with each other, like dogs do, mostly when they are puppies. They also develop hierarchies within the pack. Coyotes' body language is similar to our dog's body language. When coyotes want to play, they do a play bow, just like a dog. Once play is initiated, they will bite each other's scruffs, just like dogs in play. Both dogs and coyotes love to vocalize. Dogs howl, bark, and growl, and make all kinds of noises. Coyotes are no different. Even though they are famous for their yapping howls, they also yelp, whine, and growl, just like their dog cousins. Coyotes are smart, and they learn fast, just like dogs. Some captive coyotes have been even trained to retrieve and point. That said, keeping a coyote as a pet is never a good idea, because unlike our domestic dogs, they are wild animals and never truly acclimate to captivity. In fact, adult coyotes who have been raised by humans are still incredibly destructive and hard to manage. If we were to let our domestic dogs go back into the wild, they would probably start living much like coyotes do. Most coyote packs are made up of family members, usually a breeding male and female, with pups from previous litters staying with their parents. When a female coyote has a litter of pups, her daughters from a previous litter will also help raise the pups, watching over them and providing them with food until they're old enough to hunt for themselves. Genetically, domestic dogs, Canis lupus familiaris, and coyotes are similar enough to interbreed and produce fertile offspring. Many cases of coy dogs, crosses between coyotes and dogs, have been documented. Although not common between coyotes usually view dogs as either prey or a threat, coy dogs often don't survive puppyhood in the wild because dog parents doesn't help to raise the pups. Coy dogs that do make it to adulthood tend to resemble the coyote parent in both appearance and behavior. Living around coyotes. Given the coyote's ability to adapt, coyote sightings in both urban and suburban areas are likely to continue. Instead of being alarmed by their presence, we should try to appreciate the coyote's close relation to our own dogs and learn to live with them. 1. Don't feed or interact with the coyotes. The best way to live in harmony with coyotes is to discourage their interactions with humans. First and foremost, feeding coyotes, whether deliberately or inadvertently, is an absolute no-no. Don't leave food out for coyotes to help them get through the winter or raise a litter of pups. While on the surface, it may seem like a humane thing to do, feeding a coyote only makes him less apprehensive of humans. Coyotes who get too used to people can get into trouble and will ultimately suffer for it. Keeping coyotes wild is the best way to help them. Most people don't deliberately feed coyotes. They do it by accidentally leaving pet food outside at night or by not securing garbage can lids. While coyotes are excellent hunters, they are also scavengers and are attracted to any kind of food that's easy to access. Don't leave food outside for your dog or cat because it will attract coyotes and other critters too. Cover trash cans and make sure they are tightly secured. Otherwise, coyotes will knock over the cans and push open the lids to get at the leftover food inside. 2. Keep cats and dogs indoors during hunting hours. The common coyote behavior that makes them so unpopular with humans is their habit of killing pets. Losing a small dog or cat to a coyote is a painful experience filled with trauma, grief, and guilt. Yet it's important to remember that when a coyote comes after a pet, he is only doing what comes naturally as a predator. It's our job to keep our pets safe from these hunters. The most effective way of protecting pets from coyotes is keeping them indoors at dawn, at dusk, and during the night. Most coyotes hunt during these hours, and pets left outside during these times of day and night are vulnerable. Make it a point to bring your small pets inside before the sun goes down, and keep them inside the house until the sun is well up in the sky. 3. Just walk away. If you do encounter a coyote, calmly walk away. Do not talk, approach, or stop and take a picture. 4. Fence your yard. If coyotes are common in your neighborhood, invest in a good fence. It needs to be 6 feet tall, but that still may not be enough. Installing a roll bar that makes it difficult for coyotes or even your own jumping dogs to grab the top is your best bet. Motion-activated lights or water sprinklers can also help. Coyotes have been on the North American continent since the Ice Age, probably arriving here long before humans did. As dog lovers, we can learn to appreciate the coyote for its close connections to our own four-legged companions. The coyotes give us a glimpse of what dogs were like before they came domesticated and provides us a window into the true dog soul. Next, we'll move on to Miss Manners by Victoria Stilwell. And this month, similarly to Coyotes, the Alpha Dog, Training Myths and Facts. There are many different opinions when it comes on how to train dogs, and these differences have caused a definite split in the dog training world. There is a saying that if you put three dog trainers in a room together, the only thing they will agree on is that the other two are wrong. There is some truth to this, but as the debate rages on, science is revolutionizing our understanding of domestic dog behavior and tipping the scales toward a more positive, humane approach that I call positive training. When I became a dog trainer over 20 years ago, the dog training industry was moving toward a more humane model. But just as positive training was gaining in popularity, punitive techniques resurfaced again on a popular American dog training show, setting positive training back years. The American Veterinary Association, the American Veterinary Society of Animal Behaviorists, and the American Humane Association were among the many institutions to sound the alarm, but the damage had already been done. At the time, my show, It's Me or the Dog, transitioned from the United Kingdom to the United States, giving American viewers an antidote to punitive training by demonstrating that dogs can learn to behave without the use of force, regardless of their age, sex, breed, or issue. The two dog training camps now had their very public flag bearers, and the debate continued to range. What is pack theory? Traditional training bases a lot of methods on what is called pack theory. Traditional trainers teach people to be pack leaders using equipment and methods designed to exert dominance and rank by suppressing the dog's believed desire to dominate people and be pack leaders themselves. This sows the seeds of distrust and leads people to use techniques that supposedly demonstrate their role as pack leaders. One technique is called the alpha role. If a dog misbehaves, he's forcefully held down on his back or side till he submits. This forceful submission intimidates and sometimes hurts the dog into obeying. What an alpha really does. The terms alpha and pack leader have become curse words in the positive training world because of the damage they cause. The word alpha is usually used to describe a dog or person who forcefully exerts control over others. But in reality, an alpha does not need to use force at all. True leadership is shown by teaching and influencing behavior in others without the use of force, something most dog lovers would rather embrace. So why have some people got it so wrong? Pack theory and misuse of the word alpha is partly due to flawed research done on captive wolves in the 1970s by David Meck, a senior scientist with the Geological Survey. Little did he know that his research was about to set off a firestorm of misunderstanding in the dog world. Positive versus punitive. There's still a long road ahead when it comes to putting punitive training methods and misuse of words to bed once and for all. But until then, I will continue to carry the flag for positive training camp. Positive training seeks to build relationships with dogs based on mutual trust, motivational rewards, and understanding. Instead of punishing negative behavior, positive trainers work to find what caused the behavior and adopt humane ways to modify and change it. The results are worth it. Dogs that are positively trained are more confident, tolerant, self-controlled, and predictable in different situations. David Meck states, "The issue isn't one of semantics and political correctness. It is one of biological correctness that accurately captures the biological and social role of the animals rather than perpetuate a faulty view." This article was cut for time. We've run out of time for today's episode of All About Pets. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. All About Pets is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.